Hello, everybody. This is the Foreign Press Association in New York, and I am the president of the Foreign Press Association, Ian Williams, and it gives me a great deal of pleasure today to introduce Alexander Xie Zhenghuang. I'm sorry about the pronunciation. I grovel and apologize beforehand. But as we will from now on call him, Alexander was recently appointed the KMT rep, the Kuomintang in Washington, where the former ruling party's voice has been muted to some extent since the rival DPP took power in Taipei. And you should remember that when we first sort of started exploring the issue of Taiwan, was it 20 years ago? Kuomintang had been the ruling party since 1949 in Taiwan. Well, even earlier, but that's another story. The KMT was the party of Chiang Kai-shek that was ruling China during the Second World War. And it opened up to democracy and very boldly and equally boldly lost to the DPP. But so the DPP has been running relations in Washington and New York since then. And, you know, from outside point of view, it's very difficult to see what the difference is. But Beijing sees the difference because, for inexplicable reasons, they prefer their old rivals, the Kuomintang, the KMT, with whom they fought a bitter struggle for many years, to be in power to the DPP. And this is one of the issues which Alexander can explain to us, why this should be so, and indeed whether the feelings are reciprocated. So there have been recently local elections in Taiwan, and the KMT scored some significant successes in local elections. And from what I can see, Alexander will explain, the jury's out on whether this was much on local issues of, you know, what you want your city or county government to look after, and how much it's cross-strait relations. Because obviously, having a nuclear superpower 100 miles across the sea is a pressing item on everyone's agenda, especially when it's threatening to invade. So, Alexander, can you explain your role as the KMT representative in Washington first, please?
Yes, I have to admit, and I promised that all my my answers would be very frank and to the reality on the ground. The KMT, ruled China for 38 years, and then after the Civil War, moved to Taiwan and continued to exist and extended the life of the Republic of China, which was established in 1911. And we continue to use the formal national name and the constitution. We have a difficult relationship with the other side of the Taiwan Strait because we have different perspective when we look at the political relationship between us. PRC consider that the cross-strait relations is a unfinished civil war. The hostilities across the Taiwan Strait or between Taiwan and the mainland has not ended. That's the very basic source of their definition or perception about the cross-strait relationship. On the other hand, in Taiwan, we see that we were established 38 years before the People's Republic and continue in existence now in Taiwan with the constitution that promulgated when we were on the mainland, when we ruled the whole China. Now, back to Ian's question. Because the KMT, my party, was in power for nearly five decades in Taiwan. So my predecessors in the KMT consider that there is no need for our party to create an international department. to do foreign affairs, because we can always go for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and let them do the job. As Ian said that our voices was almost muted, it was because that in our party organization, we only have overseas chapter department. We did not have a international affairs department until about 3 years ago. Two consecutive chairmen had vowed to reestablish our representative office in Washington, D.C., to make sure that we can continue our engagement with our interlocutors in U.S. government, as well as the academia, business community, and also the press corps. But because of the short of funding, the previous chairman was not able to make it happen. But my chairman, when elected in October 2021, he determined and decided that no matter how hard it costs, that we must do our job right. So we established or re-established our representative office in Washington, D.C. On Pennsylvania Avenue. Since February this year. And I was appointed the first representative of KMT to the United States in April. And that has been my job. I'm also the Director of International Affairs, which requires me to receive visiting delegations in Taiwan as well. So I fly back and forth between Taipei and Washington, D.C. Almost every month, and I hope to see everyone possible when I am in the United States. This is the very true story and origin of my office now, located in 601 Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C.
Well, I think it's technically called the end of the dictatorship and the resumption of democracy. The China lobby, as it was called in Washington, was one of the most formidable. I mean, it knocked spots off the Irish and the Israeli lobbies. But a lot of its supporters were from what you might call the more conservative wing of American politics. And I have to say that the DPP never quite realized this, and they were grooming people. Even after the Democrats became significantly more important, they still carried on stroking Republicans. Now, that support has widened out, obviously, with like Nancy Pelosi's visit and the support on both sides, the bipartisan support for Taiwan against the PRC. So have you been able to pick up where the old China lobby left? Have you got all of those contacts? Can you blow a whistle and get a load of congressmen voting for the way you want?
Well, I have to admit that right now, DPP have been in power for 6 years. We have three change of government in the past 20 years. Currently, we are short of funding, so it's very hard for me to work in Washington, D.C. with a lobbyist group or other firms. But Ian had just mentioned that we still maintain good connections, and I myself, have spent 15 years living, studying in Washington, D.C. I came to the United States when Ronald Reagan was the president, and I got married in the United States. I still got my two boys now working in the state of Maryland. So the United States is actually my second home. So I would be a happy man, as I always said, that if Taiwan's interests overlap as much as possible with the United States, then I could be more than happy, because we do have United States citizens in my house. Because I also visit a lot, so I maintain my connections and relationship since mid 1980s. So I always feel welcome and feel like home when I visit the United States. It's a happy journey for me, challenging, but very happy. And now I'm even more happier to represent my party to the United States. And I am committed to work with all sectors in the United States and try to promote the mutual interest between Taiwan and the United States.
Well, there we were saying Taiwan and the Republic of China. This is confusing to many Americans who right. are easily confused where foreign affairs is concerned.
Yeah.
Can you explain to them the difference between the DPP point of view on mainland on Straits issues and the KMT?
Okay, you know, this is class 101. Okay,
exactly.
Republic of China, my country's formal name was created or established in 1911, the first republic in Asia. And the People's Republic of China now with the capital in Beijing was established in 1949 after the Civil War. Now, to Ian's question, we have two major parties, blue and green. The Green Party is DPP or Democratic Progressive Party now in power. We KMT is blue and now in opposition. Our differences on the cross-strait relations have been very clear because Democratic Progressive Party or DPP has a one article in their party charter that they established that party in 1986 in Taiwan with a purpose to create a new independent country in Taiwan. But our position, the KMT, we believe that we should stick with the constitution. We do not believe that a de jure independence is in the interest of Taiwanese people. In reality, a de jure independence of Taiwan means war across the Taiwan Strait. So,
but you rigorously defend the de facto independence, don't you?
We prefer a de facto independence. We prefer a peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. We do not prefer a high tension status quo as the DPP maintain right now. We wanted to mitigate the threat, reduce the possibility of crisis, which served not only our own interests, but the interest of our neighboring countries in the Asia Pacific. So the basic difference is that DPP is pursuing a de jure independence, a permanent separation from the mainland. But we prefer to maintain democracy and peace and stability and leave the future of political relationship across the Taiwan Strait to the next generation.
This is sort of kicking the ball down the court in a way, isn't it? If you're faced with an opponent who's saying, we're coming to get you, is that necessarily the most appropriate response? The one that stirs the minds of the voters, for example?
Well, of course we have options, right? We can choose to ignore Beijing's will. We can show our defiance. We can commit it to, Taiwanese people can vote for DPP, committed for a de jure independence and permanent separation. But we also need to be very cool-headed and understand that a true independence would have to be out of two ways. One is to convince Beijing to give up their goal of unification. The other way is to fight a war and defeat the People's Republic and make sure that they agree a formal independence of Taiwan. If we cannot do both or either one, you know, the best way is not to prolong the process or kick the can down the road. It's not that simple. It's to make sure that our people now and our next generation that can live and continue to survive the Republic of China, to continue to live under democratic institution, enjoy the freedom, and to fulfill that goal, we need to be very smart to be able to deal with the regime in Beijing. And that's why my message to the United States is that we do not give up our freedom. We maintain and defend our democracy, but we also need to be very smart. Confrontational sometimes is fun and is courageous, but it may not extend the interests of our people. So our mission is very clear, that do everything possible to deal with the belligerent Beijing. Either, no matter there are a peaceful dove or a ugly warrior wolf.
Fire-breathing dragon.
We are only 70 nautical miles away. You know, I think a lot of Americans understand that Mexico had always complained that they are too close to the United States and too far away from the God. I think we are too close to the mainland, a communist regime, and too far away from the United States. So we need to be smart. We need to use our brain to maintain the peace and stability, to shout slogans or to show our defiance only through keyboards. It doesn't resolve the problem. I think we are more realistic than many. We want to roll our policy and present it to our people in the next presidential election. We believe that Xi Jinping, when he extended his term for the third time and declared that he wanted to, reunify the mainland and Taiwan, if necessary, by force. When Beijing is not shy away from showing their warrior wolf teeth, need to be more vigilant than before. We cannot be naive. So our platform is very clear that we will continue to boost our defense while maintaining communication channels with the
other side. As Teddy Roosevelt said, speak softly and carry a big stick behind your back.
Yes, we don't know how big our stick is, but yeah. Your support, the support from Western democracy, the people that believe that man should enjoy freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and you are our big stick, and we can stand with you and preserve the government that our founding father, Dr. Sun Yat-sen, believed. Similar to President Abraham Lincoln, that we will maintain a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And our very existence would be the biggest threat to a one-party dictatorship across the Taiwan Strait.
So did the Kuomintang welcome Nancy Pelosi's visit, or did you regard it as some of the Republicans here did as an unnecessary provocation?
Well, I can give you two different answers. One is assume that if we were in power, how are we going to do that? Okay. And the other is that as opposition, how can we do it? But let me say this, that my party welcomes Speaker Pelosi's visit. From the very beginning, when the idea first came to the press, when we learned that Speaker Pelosi intended to visit Taiwan, we started from day one that we show our welcome to the speaker. However, we will do it if we were in power differently. Number one, we will work closely with the current administration and to sit down and lay out all possible different consequences and scenarios that we might encounter together. We will also maintain close communication with the speaker's office and understand what she intended to do when visit Taiwan, what kind of message that she wanted to bring to Taiwanese people. We will inform our own citizens that the House of Representatives represents the American people. And so the Speaker of the House is the highest representative of American people. And we welcome the highest representative of American people visit Taiwan and say hello to meet and shake hands with Taiwanese people. And also with full transparency, we will inform our American interlocutors that we need to use our communication line to inform Beijing that and tell them our decision to welcome Speaker Pelosi's visit. And we will inform Beijing that her visit is not a declaration or encouragement of a de jure Taiwan independence. We will inform Beijing that we have no evil mind or any hidden agenda when we welcome a leader from a democratic friendly country. And finally, we will inform Beijing that if they react, irrationally, then we will defend our sovereignty and territorial integrity to the very end. We will not back down, even with the objection of Beijing. That would be the way we deal with the speaker's visit.
It involves some delicate balancing, but the whole idea, the first time I went to Taiwan, I believe the legislative yuan still had representatives allegedly from the mainland, even from Mongolia, because the former ROC never recognized Mongolian independence. I think it's changed since. But so you had this old system in which the ROC was still claiming to be the government of the whole of China. Now, has the KMT sort of abandoned those and said no? Because obviously Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek, as he was known at the time, had armies, and he had definitely had plans to reinvade the mainland and to reassert KMT power there. And now they've all been abandoned, I presume, and on practicality.
I think it had been very clear, when I was a elementary school student in Taiwan, that a military recovery of the mainland by the KMT or by our force was almost impossible. And that's why since late 1960s, Taiwan had been focused under the KMT rule, focused on economic development. The slogan and policy then was to build Taiwan as a model province of a future China when I was young. And later on in the early 90s, after parallel to the timeframe of the end of the Cold War, we became fully democratized, and we no longer have any representative from the mainland. All the people's representatives from local to the central legislative bodies are all elected by Taiwan people from Taiwan. And interestingly, even with two times of DPP government, we still have a Department of Hong Kong, Macau, Mongolia, and Tibet in the Mainland Affairs Council, a cabinet-level agency in the government. So even under the current DPP government, we still maintain our office of Mongolia and Tibet. You know, it adheres to our constitution, as I said, that as long as we did not change our traditional territory, as long as we did not amend our constitution, we claim that we will maintain that the size and scope of our sovereignty and territory. But we also are very clear in our mind that the jurisdiction of the Republic of China on Taiwan covers only the Taiwan province and several offshore islands of Fujian province. Many foreign friends did not know that in our government, we still have a Fujian provincial government. We do not provide budget and funding, but we still keep that office in name because we control the offshore islands next to the Fujian coast as well, like Kimoi and Mazu.
Personally, I love constitutional anomalies like this. Coming from Britain originally with the British Commonwealth and its residual territories or whatever, it appeals to something historical and atavistic in me. But
it also provides that because we believe that the political differences across the Taiwan Strait cannot be resolved easily or quickly. We maintain that there could be options in the future. So there is no need to change the constitution. If people wanted to amend the constitution, we have laws and regulations and a referendum act that people can exercise if they collected sufficient vote. We can still amend our constitution in Taiwan.
Hong Kong is a very pertinent issue because it seemed that, first of all, Deng Xiaoping's formula for the accession of Hong Kong to the mainland seemed to show a lot of promise, the two systems, one country, two systems. And it seemed to many of us, I was actually there at the time, and it looked as though the PRC was, by its own light, being very sincere, a token garrison in Hong Kong, in the form of Prince of Wales barracks, by the way, as we speaking of historical anomalies. But the when she and, was it Jiang Zemin or Xi, basically ripped this up and said, no, you do what we say, and we're going to ignore what the British and other people regard as an internationally binding agreement on the two systems transition, this really must have, it must have impinged upon your hopes for a negotiated solution, because the message for people in Taiwan was, up yours, we don't care what you say, and we'll negotiate an agreement and we'll rip it up the day after if we find it inconvenient.
Well, of course, in Beijing and in London, they have different interpretations of the Sino-British Joint Declaration. We in Taiwan, we believe that the Joint Declaration on Hong Kong between Beijing and London should be seen as an international treaty. and should be honored. Now, Xi Jinping changed the idea of one country, two systems, or Hong Kong formula that was initiated by his predecessors, Deng Xiaoping. And people witnessed that how Beijing regime that defined the one country, two system by their People's Congress, but not listening to the calls and hearts and minds of the Hong Kong citizens. We feel very sad about our friends in Hong Kong. In fact, only a few hours ago, I hosted a dinner with many friends that, from Hong Kong visiting Taiwan to watch our democracy, to watch our election. And we maintain, KMT maintain the position that the relationship between Taiwan and Hong Kong is a special one as defined by our constitution. We do not see Hong Kong as a integral part of the People's Republic of China. We continue to work hard to earn the hearts and minds of Hong Kong people. Now back to your question, Ian. The one country, two system idea first came from Deng Xiaoping. He initiated it in 1981. During that time, Taiwan was under the KMT rule. And our president, Chiang Kai-shek, rejected the idea from day one. So my party, the KMT, is the very origin of anti-one country, two system idea from the very beginning. It's not the DPP that developed such resistance. Actually, we started from day one. And Beijing understand that perfectly.
The basis of your objection was on principle or the practicality. You're saying that they were only kidding?
In both ways. Because Deng Xiaoping's idea, if we go back to his original concept, Beijing considered that they were the central government and any territory or location or region under the one country, two system would have to subordinate it to Beijing authority. And that's why from the very beginning, we reject that. We consider anything that between Taiwan and the mainland should be determined equal, on the equal footing, and accepted by the Taiwanese people. My party, KMT, continue to hold firmly of that position, that any change or any future or any concept or any formula should be agreed by the majority of the Taiwanese people. And so both in theory and in practice, we object that idea.
One of the relations, since I mentioned the British Commonwealth, is I could never quite see why the Chinese couldn't understand that New Zealand and Australia are as close, in their famous Maoist phrase, as close as lips and teeth to Britain, but they're completely independent and there's no subordination involved in these close ties. But the Beijing doesn't seem to be able to see anything without the subordination.
Well, yeah, I think there might be a day that, because I think, Ian, you have visited both the mainland and Taiwan, and Chinese history. I have said to my friends all along that in our thousands of years of history, no emperor had ever been immortal, and no death dynasty had been there forever. So we believe firmly that the mainland will not be under a one-party dictatorship forever. Our job in Taiwan is to preserve our democracy, do not make stupid, unnecessary decisions. do not walk in front of the God. And we will do our best to defend the ways of our living and make the future options open. There will be a day that the mainland Chinese people decided that they can no longer tolerate a one-party dictatorship.
The sign is now on that.
Well, people raise their white paper at some point, right? And we all went through the Tiananmen incident in 1989 when I was a doctoral candidate in the United States. I mean, those scenery is fresh and people will come back to fight for their rights. And we believe in Taiwan. And our constitution also said that we should honor the natural cause of human beings, which is freedom and democracy. And so we will lay our hope that the human nature will bring about a change. No matter how long it takes, there will be a change. And Taiwan should wait until such a time and do not kill ourselves out of stupidity or wrong policy now and destroy the possible good future.
You just had the local elections in which there was a blue wave, I think was the phrase you used. Yep. To what extent was this about domestic politics, about sort of sending a warning, a midterm warning to the DPP that you're getting too arrogant? And to what extent was it ideological? You know, transposing it from American terms, for example, Taiwan was one of the first countries in Asia to adopt a universal healthcare system, which I notice your representative didn't actually push in the nose of the Republicans in power at the time when they came to visit. In fact, I raised it at one issue and the health minister came. I said, did you mention this to your friends in Congress? He said, Ian, it completely slipped my mind. He knew what he was doing. So, I mean, ideologically, is apart from the national issue, are there profound differences between the KMT and the DPP? I mean, you both supported the universal healthcare system. You both support a large measure of social welfare provision in a sort of Swedish social democratic way. Ex-Swedish, I'm not sure where they are now. But so, you know, ideologically, in the big issues that used to be the ones that divided and people fought over, is there that much difference apart from how we deal with international politics?
Well, it's quite interesting that you mentioned healthcare. Actually, the universal healthcare system was introduced by my party when we were in power. And both DPP and KMT and the whole Taiwanese people enjoy. We pay our price. We pay tax to support such a national.
And one of the lowest prices in the world, as I understand as well. It's one of the pride and joys of Taiwan.
Yeah, we can walk into a clinic and paying probably $1.5 for the medical service. This is part of the social welfare.
And it's the lowest percentage of GDP as well spent on healthcare. Even though it delivers the results, it's another telling point where I think Taiwan sets an example to the world and to the mainland.
And that's why we are so proud of ourselves, because we managed to bring the best interests of our people. In the local election, unfortunately for the DPP government, is that people voted based on their feelings. It's a public sentiment that the TPP, the second time that they were in power and so far for more than 6 years, the DPP government, especially quite a lot officials, turned to be very arrogant, and did not respond to people's call. You know, the COVID hurts economy. It's across border lines. It's a global phenomenon. But the government, the DPP, continue to inform the general public that how good is our economic index, and how much increase of our GDP compares to last year. But you know that more than 70% of our people are in service industry. You know, Taiwan make money through our, IC, chips and high tech industry. So the gap between the rich and the poor become a serious issue. But so when people heard the government continue to say, oh, don't worry, because our economic growth percentage looks the best in Asia. But most of people, the walk of life on the street, did not feel that. And also in this election, there are many, DPP politicians involving, I cannot say it's a crime, but it's a plagiarism of their, academic degrees. Right now, I can report to you only about 11 hours ago, our best university, National Taiwan University, had made the verdict that the current DPP mayor of Taoyuan involved in plagiarism in his master degree thesis. His degree is revoked by the National Taiwan University, which has been the third or the fourth, DPP politician that had been involved in the same, issue. And interestingly, all their thesis advisors were the same person who happened to be our National Security Bureau chief, equivalent to the director of Central Intelligence. So for a lot of people, especially during this local election, people voted for domestic issues. People voted for, the difficulties in their life, and people voted against the arrogance and wrongdoings or personalities or personal integrity of DPP politicians. One thing I have to say that it also play a bigger role in this local election result is that the government refused, about 2 years, 18, 20 months ago, when the COVID hit Taiwan severely, when people are dying, the government refused, or at least given a very, very, difficult obstacles for business and a business community to buy mRNA vaccine from the United States and from Germany, because the DPP government wanted to wait for an indigenous developed Taiwan version of vaccine. But it was not recognized by WHO. And the government continued to inform the people, or panic people, that the domestic vaccine is as effective as the foreign vaccine, which was not the case. Right now, for those Taiwan citizens who took domestic vaccines, still cannot travel to Japan and to many other countries because It was not approved or what
recognized.
They call recognized by the World Health Organization. So people were angry at this government because they have a comfortable majority in the legislative body. They can roll out their policy and approve by the parliament by raising their hand without debate. That's how people not react, if not rebel, and show that in the ballot, in the election, last weekend.
It shows, in a way, it's reassuring. It means that Taiwan is part of the community of democratic nations where spurious qualifications, the COVID vaccine and the government's dealing with it, incumbent privileges are all big issues in almost every government in the free world. So welcome to the club, I suppose, from all point of view. in a very dubious way.
I waited until the pandemic breakout was in 2020. I had my first mRNA vaccine shot in October 2021 because I couldn't have one. And if I choose to take vaccine, my only choice is a non-WHO approved Taiwan indigenous vaccine. I refused to take that, and I waited and waited until October last year to have my first shot. So, you know, I cannot say, I am angry at anyone, but as a college professor, as a intellectual, as a former government official, I try to understand the government position, but as a human being, as a father, as a husband, you know, and as a son, my parents were in their 90s. They did not have vaccine. So, and it's because that the government wanted to block the importation of vaccines so they can buy time to develop the indigenous one. And for those, you know, I have my personal anger, but I don't want to say it now, especially I was a foreign service officer. You know, usually diplomats would not criticize our own government or country in front of foreigners. But I just want to be honestly and share with you that my personal feeling is it was not good. And I think that reacted in the recent election, that people wanted to use their ballot and send a message to the supermajority and a government that control both executive and legislative branches to do whatever they want by raising hand. It is a democracy, but it is a democracy that people feel uncomfortable. So they use their ballot to send the message this time.
Well, somebody's asking some provocative questions here as well.
Sure.
Well, sure. Ronald Bryn wants to know, in the event of invasion, who would be your allies?
I think I grew up in a military family. For those of who visited Taiwan, this year accounted for the 38th annual Hanguang joint military exercise. The Hanguang joint military exercises was incepted after the derecognition of the United States of Taiwan. And after we terminated the ROC-USA Mutual Defense Treaty. I have to say, and I can testify, in the past 38 years, not even one year in our war game scenarios that we put foreign assistance to our war game. We defend our island by ourselves. We hope that we can have support from the democratic allies around the world. I think people will side with us. Even though your people may not want your government to send troops to fight with us, but we understand that you will use every possible diplomatic, economic, financial, even technology sanctions against an invader. And we will fight for our own homeland. And we hope that the world can help us and assist us. After all, a democracy that created and continue to honor and develop by a Han Chinese or ethnic Chinese entity should have support from our fellow friendly democracies around the world.
We've seen in the case of Ukraine how significant support from foreign sympathetic countries can be, regardless of whether actual fighting troops or forces are involved. But we're coming towards the end, and we have to consider the, as you know, it's been for 10 or 15 years, politics in Washington, especially on foreign affairs, has been almost dysfunctional because parties can score. Parties use foreign affairs to score points about the budget, about allies, about all sorts of things, regardless of the consequences, because for their constituencies, on the face of it, there are no consequences. Taiwan, not Taiwan, Ukraine, not Ukraine. So, you know, they can say, no, we want to knock, we want to save $20 billion off the foreign aid budget. So we don't care if you're sort of hanging on a thread in the face of a foreign threat. They'll offer to cut it. So it's because of the nature of how foreign policy is decided in the US, the decisions are not necessarily rational. I've always said the foreign policy in the US is you put six cats in a bag, you sew it up, and then you kick it and see which way they end up when they've finished fighting. And that's my own personal analogy.
Well,
so the question now is, I mean, you have to deal with Democrats and Republicans, and also as a KMT representative, you have to gauge whether a proposal, because Nancy Pelosi has gone to a Democratic speaker has gone to Taiwan, there are going to be Republicans who say this is wrong regardless, and we're not going to support Taiwan because Nancy Pelosi went there. I mean, it's a very reflexive, unthinking position that a lot of them take. How are you going to cope with that, apart from having a psychiatrist on tap?
Well, I told my students in classrooms, and I also talked to my audience in Taiwan that, you know, after Nancy Pelosi, I think the future speaker, Kevin McCarthy, may want to visit Taiwan next year. And we will have to prepare ourselves for another strong reaction from Beijing. You know, especially when Xi Jinping easily got his third term 2 months ago. And so I think at least myself, I was the director of American Studies in my university. I continue to teach American politics and understand how difficult, no matter it's a strategic clarity or strategic ambiguity, that there are processes to go through. I mean, the executive branch, the Congress, the president's personality determination, all factors involved. It's not a guaranteed American assistant of Taiwan. To understand American foreign policy, you may spend years on Capitol Hill, walk along the hallway, and shake hands and talk to people to understand how it works. It's complicated. But the takeaway from the Ukraine experience are several. First, we have to defend ourselves. Number two, there could be foreign assistance, but it will not be unlimited. As many weapon systems are drained very fast and inventories becomes low, even friendlier country can only offer verbal support. And that's why the third takeaway is that if we encounter these issues, we should not think about a Taiwan contingency only through the lens of Ukraine or only through the lens of military kinetic conflict. Don't ever forget preventive diplomacy. Don't ever forget that even conflicting parties in the Berlin crisis or in the Cuban Missile Crisis, the communication line should be open. We are the only party that maintain communication lines with the other side. Currently only function to help our business community. And many of you do not understand that no matter which party is in power in Taiwan, we have maintained more than 1 million Taiwan citizens that living, studying, working on mainland China. And that's a constituency that we cannot cut off or ignore either. So to have a healthy mainland policy, it's a smart way and a realistic way to look at the government responsibility. I mean, shouting slogans, boost anti-China sentiment may win you some vote, but the reality is that we do, like many other countries, that mainland China is a large market for us. If we discount the cross-strait trade, Taiwan will be in trade deficit in our total foreign trade. That's the reality. When the DPP government claim and try to boost a anti-China sentiment in Taiwan, the numbers, the cold numbers tells the story that when KMT stepped down in 2016, the trade with the mainland accounted for 39% of our total foreign trade. Guess what? 6 years under DPP with a very strong anti-China slogan and policy. Now, under DPP, our trade with the mainland is accounted more than 42% of our total foreign trade. So I think people are smart in Taiwan. They understand that the DPP government is talking about something and doing about other things. Oh, another interesting story that I want to show, because KMT had always been under attack by DPP, saying that KMT is a pro-China party. They have communication lines. If you talk to China, then you betray the interests of Taiwan. Before this election, there were three DPP candidates who attacked our candidate in the local, elections, but were found that they did business in China as well. And they even, when they fill their business application form, they fill nationality as China, Taiwan themselves. So, if we continue to play this game, I think, Taiwan, we have our own interests. I do not want to play into a game of ideology or even a false wrong charge against, the other political party for your own interests. I think what we need to do is to realize that Xi Jinping got his third term, and he is a man that can make a decision to send the People's Liberation Army to unify Taiwan by force. We need to prepare for that. If we need time, for instance, 3 to 5 years, 7 years before we can say, now the weapon systems that we purchased from the United States will arrive to Taiwan and get people trained. If we say that we need 5 years to reform our reserve and mobilization system, then we need to be smart not to make the war taking place in 2 years. You know, we need to work together with our friends.
Well, I'd like to thank you for a lucid and articulate display. And as you said, it's a straight modern China 101, I think, for many of our listeners and watchers. And I look forward to speaking more with you when you come back to Washington. And thank you, everybody. This has been the Foreign Press Association in New York, speaking to Alexander Huang, who is the KMT professor of politics and representative of the KMT in Washington. And look forward to hearing more from him about a different perspective, not that different, but different, a different nuance, shall we say, in a world that doesn't go much on nuance anymore. But thank you very much, Alex, and for making the time.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody.